Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is L.A. Steel. Tonight will be the last show for this week. We won't be doing a show on Friday. George and I kind of took the night off. But we will be back the following week, following Friday, and of course Thursday. And Wednesday, possibly. I think next week there may be a schedule change there, too, which will be announced. trying to squeak in a vacation before the end of August here. And, a little difficult being on the air four nights a week. But nevertheless, tonight I wanted to read an essay by Emerson, and I have to just hold on one second here. I'll be. That's great. I'm not officially signed in here. I kind of. If you just bear with me for a second. My switchboard going here. Log talk seems to be a little slow tonight. The essay that I was hoping to read tonight was from Ralph Waldo Emerson, and it's called Friendship, and it's a remarkable essay for anybody who might have read it. We'll know, but. Throughout my life, I've had a tremendous number of acquaintances and friends, and I've been very, very lucky because of that. But the sad part about friendship is that so often you lose friends, and that happens quite often, unfortunately. But I guess that's part of being a friend. And even if you don't hear from a friend for a couple of years and wonder what's happened to them, and you can't locate them or you lost their numbers or whatever, a friend is, to me, is always a friend. Whether it was 25 or 40 years ago or... whether it's was just last week, friendship is kind of a sacred institution, if you will. And I kind of like what Emerson said. I'm not certain if I agree with him fully on it, but Emerson had a way of taking the of going to the ultimate. With his ideas, and I hope we can get through a good part of this tonight. It's rather a long essay, but it's a good one. And we have a great deal more kindness than is ever spoken. Nice way to start an essay, I always felt. That is so true, because so many of the friends, people that I've known as friends, have had a unique connection with in some way. There's a bond there, and I've had friends that were criminals, and friends that are saints. So it's like, it's hard to understand the bond that you have with people, except that there are moments when you connect to a soul, and for some reason those bonds are eternal in their remarkable, what can I say there, the substance of that. And I can't quite understand that exactly, but it's more of a psychic and more of a synchronicity, psychic synchronicity. It's a good way to look at it with friendship. Like I said, if you may not know or hear from a friend for many years. You may not know what happened to them. They may not know what happened to you, but yet you can meet them. And a real friend is somebody that, once you meet, when you see, regardless how long it's been or regardless of what circumstances are around them, when you see them, when you meet them again, that same connection is always there. Regardless of who they are, what they are, what their circumstances have been in life, and what yours have been, a friend will always connect with a friend. And I'm going to start the essay now. And if you'd like to call in tonight, if you'd like to become involved with the program, please do. The number is 646-915-9505. Excuse me. We have a great deal more kindness than is ever spoken. Mog is the selfishness that chills like east winds the world. The whole human family is bathed with an element of love like a fine ether. How many persons we meet in houses whom we scarcely speak to, whom yet we honor, and who honor us. How many we see in the street or sit with in church, whom though silently we warmly rejoice to be with. Read the language of these wandering eye beams. The heart knoweth. And again, that's what he says. Read the language of these wandering eye beams. We've all been through there. We've all had that in some way or another. And if you haven't, I pity those who haven't had that connection. And how many persons we meet in houses whom we scarcely speak, to whom we yet honor, and who honor us. Read the language of these wandering eye beams, and the heart knoweth. The effect of the indulgence of this human affection is a certain cordial exhilaration. In poetry and in common speech, the emotions of benevolence and complacency which are felt toward others are likened to the material effect of fire, so swift, or much more swift, more active, more cheering, like these fine inward irradiations. From the highest degree of passionate love to the lowest degree of goodwill, they make the sweetness of life. Our intellectual and active powers increase with our affection. The scholar sits down to write, and all his years of meditation do not furnish him with one good thought or happy expression. But it is necessary to write a letter to a friend, and forthwith troops of gentle thoughts invest themselves, or every hand with chosen words. See in any house where virtue and self-respect abide, the palpitation which the approach of a stranger causes. A commended stranger is expected and announced, and an uneasiness betwixt pleasure and pain evades all the hearts of a household. His arrival almost brings fear to the good hearts that would welcome him. The house is dusted, all things fly into their places, the old coat is exchanged for the new, and they must get up and get up a dinner if they can. Of a commended stranger, only the good report is told by others, only the good and new is heard by us. He stands to us for humanity. He is what we wish. Having imagined and invested him, we ask how we should stand related in conversation and action with such a man and are uneasy with fear. The same idea exalts conversation with him. We talk better than we are wont. We have the nimblest fancy, a richer memory, and our dumb evil devil has taken leave for the time. For long hours we can continue a series of sincere and graceful, rich communications drawn from the oldest, secretest experience, so that they who sit by of our own kinsfolk and acquaintance shall feel a lively surprise at our unusual powers. But as soon as the stranger begins to intrude his partialities, his definitions, his defects into the conversation, it is all over. He has heard the first, the last, and the best he will ever hear from us. He is no stranger now. Vulgarity, ignorance, misapprehension are old acquaintances. Now when he comes, he may get the older. He may get the order, the dress, and the dinner, but the throbbing of the heart and the communication of the soul, no more. What is so pleasant as these jets of affection which make a young world for me again? What so delicious as a just and firm encounter of two in a thought, in a feeling? How beautiful on their approach to this beating heart and steps and forms of the gifted and the true. The moment we indulge our affections, the earth is metamorphosed. There is no winter and no night. All tragedies, all inus vanish, all duties even. Nothing fills the preceding eternity but the forms all radiant of beloved persons. Let the soul be assured that somewhere in the universe it should rejoin its friend, and it would be content and cheerful alone for 1,000 years. I awoke this morning with devout thanksgiving for my friends, the old and the new. Shall I not call God the beautiful, who daily showereth himself so to me in his gifts? I chide society, I embrace solitude, and yet I am not so ungrateful as not to see the wise and lovely and the noble-minded as from time to time they pass my gate. Who hears me, who understands me, becomes mine, a possession for the time. Nor is nature so poor, but she gives me this joy several times, and thus we weave social threads of our own, a new web of relations. And as many thoughts in succession substantiate themselves, we shall by and by stand in a new world of our own creation, and no longer strangers and pilgrims in a traditionary globe. My friends come to me unsought. The great God gave them to me. But oldest right by the divine affinity of virtue with itself, I find them, or rather not I, but the deity in me, and in them derides and cancels the thick walls of individual character, relationship, relation, age, sex, circumstance, at which he usually connives and now makes many one. High thanks I owe excellent lovers who carry out the world for me to new and noble depths and enlarge. Large the meaning of all my thoughts. There's a little pollen in the air tonight, but here's a new poetry of the first bard. Poetry without stop. Hymn, ode, and epic. Poetry still flowing. Apollo and the Muses, chanting still. Will these two separate themselves from me again? Or some of them? I know not, but I fear it not. For my relation to them is so pure that we hold by simple affinity, and the genius of my life being thus social, the same affinity will exert its energy on whomsoever is as noble as these men and women wherever I may be. I confess to an extreme tenderness of nature on this point. It is almost dangerous to me to crush the sweet poison of misused wine, of the affections. A new person is to me a great event, and hinders me from sleep. I have often had fine fancies about persons which have given me delicious hours, but the joy ends in the day, it yields no fruit. Thought is not born of it, and action is very little modified. I must feel pride in my friend's accomplishments as if they were mine, and a property in his virtues. I feel as warmly when he is praised as the lover when he hears applause of his engaged maiden. He overestimates the conscience of our friend. We overestimate the conscience of our friend. His goodness seems better than our goodness. His nature finer, his temptations less. Even everything that is his name, his form, his dress, books and instruments, fancy enhances. Our own thoughts sounds new and larger from his mouth. Yet the systole and diastole of the heart are not without their analogy in the ebb and flow of life, of love, rather, and friendship, like the immortality of the soul, is too good to be believed. The lover, beholding his maiden half, knows that she is not verily that which he worships, and in the golden hour of friendship, we are surprised with shades of suspicion and unbelief. We doubt that we bestow our own hero the virtues in which he shines, and afterwards worship the form to which he shall ascribe his divine inhibition, inhabitation. The strictness, the soul does not respect men as it respects itself. In strict Kant science, all persons underlie the same condition of an infinite remoteness. Shall we fear to cool our love by mining for the metaphysical foundation of this Elysian temple? Shall I not be as real as the thing I see? If I am, I shall not fear to know them for what they are. Their essence is not less beautiful than their appearance, though it needs finer organs for its apprehension. The root of the plant is not unsightly to science, though for chaplets and festoons we cut the stem short. Excuse me. And I must hazard the production of the bald fact amidst these pleasing reveries, though I should prove an Egyptian skull at our banquet. A man who stands united with his thought conceives magnificently of himself. He is conscious of a universal success, even though brought by uniform particular failures. No advantages, no powers, no gold or force can be any match for him. I cannot choose but rely on my own poverty more than on your wealth. I cannot make your consciousness tantamount to mine. Only the star dazzles, the planet as a faint moonlight ray. I hear what you say of the admirable parts of the tired, or rather of the tried temper of the party you praise, but I see well that for all his purple cloaks I shall not like him, unless he is at least a poor Greek like me. I cannot deny it, O friend, that the vast shadow of the phenomenal includes thee also in its pied and painted immensity. Thee also, compared with whom all else is shadow, thou art not being. As truth is as justice is, thou art not my soul, but a picture, an effigy of that. Thou hast come to me lately, and already thou art seizing thy hat and cloak. Is it not that the soul put forth friends, and the tree put forth leaves, and presently, by the germination of new buds, extrudes the old leaf. The law of nature is alternation forevermore. Each electrical state superinduces the opposite. The soul environs itself with friends, that it may enter into grander self-acquaintance or solitude, and it goes alone for a season, that it may exalt its conversation or society. This method betrays itself along the whole history of our personal relations. The instinct of affection revives the hope of union with our mates, and the returning sense of insulation recalls us from the chase. Thus, every man passes his life in this search after friendship, and if he should record his true sentiment, he might write a letter like this to each new candidate for his love. Dear friend, if I was sure of thee, sure of thy capacity, sure to match my mood with thine, I would never think again of trifles in relation to thy comings and goings. I am not very wise, my moods are quite attainable, and I respect thy genius. It is to me as yet unfathomed, yet dare I not presume in thee a perfect intelligence of me, and so thou art to me a delicious torment, thine ever or never. Yet these uneasy pleasures and fine pains are for curiosity and not for life. They are not to me to be indulged. This is to weave cobweb and not cloth. Our friendships hurry to short and poor conclusions because they have made them a texture of wine and dreams instead of the tough fiber of the human heart. The laws of friendship are austere and eternal, of one web with the laws of nature and of morals. But we have aimed at a swift and petty benefit to suck a sudden sweetness. We snatch at the slowest fruit in the whole garden of God, which many summers and many winters must ripen. We seek our friends not sacredly, but with an adulterate passion, which would appropriate him to ourselves. In vain, we are armed all over with subtle antagonisms, which as soon as we meet, begin to play and translate all poetry into stale prose. Almost all people descend to meet. All associations must be a compromise, and what is worse, the very flower and aroma of the flower of each of the beautiful natures disappears as they approach each other. What a perpetual disappointment is actual society, even of the virtuous and gifted. After interviews have been compassed and long for foresight, we must be tormented presently by baffled blows, by sudden unseasonable apathies, by epilepsies of wit and of animal spirits in the heyday of friendship and thought. Our facilities, or rather our faculties, do not play as true, and both parties are relieved by solitude. I ought to be equal to every relation. It makes no difference how many friends I have and what content I can find in conversing with each, if there be one to whom I am not equal. If I have shrunk unequal from one contest, the joy I find in all the rest becomes mean and cowardly. I should hate myself if then I made my other friend my asylum. Excuse me. Our impatience is thus sharply rebuked. Bashfulness and apathy are a tough husk in which a delicate organization is protected from premature ripening. It would be lost if it knew itself before any of the best souls were yet ripe enough to know and own it. Respect the natural and gamaskite, which hardens the ruby in a million years and works in duration, in which Alps and Andes come and go as rainbows. The good spirit of our life has no heaven, which is the price of rashness. Love
which is the essence of God, is not for levity, but for the total worth of man. Let us not have the childish luxury in our regards, but the austere, austerest worth. Let us approach our friend with an audacious trust in the truth of his heart and the breadth impossible to be overturned of his foundations. The attractions of this subject are not to be resisted, and I leave for the time all accounts of subordinate social benefit to speak of that select and sacred revelation which is a kind of absolute and which even leaves the language of love suspicious and common. So much is this pure, and nothing is so much divine. I do not wish to treat friendships daintily, but with roughest courage. When they are real, they are not glass threads or frostwork, but the solidest thing we know. For now, after so many ages of experience, what do we know of nature or of ourselves? Not one step has man taken toward the solution of the problem of his destiny. In one condemnation of folly stand the whole universe of man. But the sweet sincerity of joy and peace which I draw from this alliance with my brother's soul is the nut itself, whereof all nature and all thought is but the husk and shell. Happiness is the house that shelters a friend. It might well be built like a festal bower or arch to entertain him a single day. Happier if he know the solemnity of that relation and honor its law. He who offers himself a candidate for that covenant comes up like an Olympian to the great games where the firstborn of the world are the competitors. He proposes himself for contests like time, want, danger are in the lists, and he alone is victor who has truth enough in his constitution to preserve the delicacy of his beauty from the wear and tear of all these. The gifts of fortune may be present or absent, but all the speed in that contest depends on intrinsic nobleness and the contempt of trifles. There are two elements that go to the composition of friendship, each so sovereign that I can detect no superiority in either, no reason why either should be first named. One is truth. A friend is a person with whom I may be sincere. Before him, I may think aloud. I am arrived at last in the presence of a man so real and equal that I may drop even those utter undermost garments of dissimulation, courtesy, and second thought, which men never put off, and may deal with him with the simplicity and wholeness with which one chemical atom meets another. And sincerity is the luxury allowed, like diadems and authority, only to the highest rank, that being permitted to speak truth is having none above it to court or conform unto. Every man alone is sincere. At the entrance of a second person, hypocrisy begins. We parry and feign the approach of our fellow man by compliments, by gossip, by amusements, by affairs. We cover up our thoughts from him under a hundred folds. I knew a man who, under a certain religious frenzy, cast off his drapery, and omitting all compliment and commonplace, spoke to the conscience of every person he encountered, and that with each insight and beauty. At first he was resisted, and all men agreed he was mad, but persisting, as indeed he could not help doing for some time in this course, he attained to the advantage of bringing every man of his acquaintance into true relations with him. No man would think of speaking falsely with him, or of putting him off with any chat of markets or reading rooms, but every man was constrained by so much sincerity to the like place plain dealing, or rather to the like plain dealing, and what love of nature, what poetry, what symbol of truth he had, he did certainly show him. But to most of us, society shows not its face and eye, but its side and its back. To stand in true relations with men in a false age is worth a fit of insanity, is it not? We can seldom go erect. Almost every man we meet requires some civility, requires to be humored. He has some fame, some talent, some whim of religion or philanthropy in his head that is not to be questioned, and which soils all conversation with him. But a friend is a sane man who exercises not my ingenuity, but me. My friend gives me entertainment without requiring any stipulation on my part. A friend, therefore, is a sort of paradox in nature. I, who alone am, I, who seek nothing in nature, whose existence I can affirm with equal evidence to my own, behold now an assemblance of my being in all its height, variety, and curiosity, reiterate in a foreign form, so that a friend may well be reckoned a masterpiece of nature. And I hope, I can't help but get excited by Emerson's thoughts. He's inspired me for well over 30 years. And I've read this essay several times. And I, each time, grapple at the depth of his genius, but also his depth of understanding of what a friend is. And friendship really is rather difficult to understand in its 21st century application. What is friendship? It's easy to say we don't really know, but we know when we experience friendship, but we don't really understand it. And friendship is so fragile, it's so fragile. I mean, you can offend someone without ever meaning to, simply by talking about the wrong topic, or being angry about a topic, or offending or insulting a political element or party or whatever. And as a talk show host, and a political talk show host, it's impossible, absolutely impossible for me not to offend somebody. And if I'm worth anything, if I'm doing my job as a talk show host, then I'm stimulating thought, stimulating discussion, stimulating dissent, I'm stimulating whatever in my listeners. And yeah, I mean, I'm going to have people angry at me. I get letters from people quite often, angry at my attitude towards Zionists, and angry at my attitude toward the banks, and the Republicans, and the Democrats, and the, you know, and I continually will receive those as long as I'm on the air, but I don't care, really. And the reason I don't care is because if anybody is offended enough by what I have to say, it's a miracle to me that they're actually even listening. And if they're listening, the odds are I've hit, you know, if they're offended by something I say, then I've touched a nerve. And if I've touched that nerve, then I've done, I've completed my mission. I've done my job. Friendship, I've made so many good friends over the years, and so many since I've been in this business of broadcasting in the last 10 years. But I've had other friends that I've had and developed in other parts of my life. I've been married a few times, so I've had, of course, a few relationships, and many relationships between those periods, but in friendships and that have turned sour. But I found that the sexual relationships could not always relate to friendships. They relate to mutual gratification, perhaps, or satisfaction, sexual satisfaction. And if you're involved with a, in our case, I'm a straight male, so, you know, involved with female relationship, to me, the ultimate friendship, if you will, the ultimate relationship, if you will, is that of male and female embraced in a relationship, but in a strong friendship, in a strong concern for each other, as well as a strong understanding of each other's needs, wants, desires, but also just that their idiosyncrasies to tolerate each other. To overlook their faults, to overlook their problems, if you will, you know, and always look to the betterment of that person, and you know, and with that, that's friendship. That's friendship. It's not to enable a person, but it's to accept the person, regardless of how high or low they become. And even in the sense of a betrayal, because so many people are betrayed by their own friends, or people they thought were friends, or wives, or husbands, or children even, or parents, you know. These relationships are not necessarily equate to friendships. They may be a little more personal than that, a little more involved than that. But as I said earlier, a friendship to me, of a quality friendship, is one where we, the synchronicity and the syncopation of thought and the desire, if you will, to always create goodwill with that person, with generosity of spirit, of finances, of kindness, of humor. You know, these are the things that we bring to our friends, and our friends bring to us, and we truly love them for that. And good friends, truly good friends, try not to burden their friends with their problems. But truly good friends are those who will unjudgingly advise another friend, aid them out of problems they may have. Cannot judge a friend, and a friend will not judge you. And you may not see a friend for many, many years. At the same time, once you meet them, as though those years never existed, and you're back in great friendship again. And these are the things in life that, these are the things that cement our lives, that create foundations to our lives. Knowing that someone cares for you, or knowing that you care for someone enough to overlook all their faults, all of their whatever, and they too overlook all of yours to the extent of laughing about them, laughing at our foibles, laughing at our limitations, laughing at ourselves in complete harmony. And at that point, we can talk about anything. We can talk about everything. And nothing becomes an affront or an affliction, or we take sides. We may argue. I may argue with friends over some issues, over politics or over beliefs or religion or whatever. But nevertheless, a friend is one who knows that these things are all superficial. All superficial. And that we are tied to our beliefs. And we respect each other's beliefs, though we may not understand them. And if I love you, if I love a person, if I respect a person for who they are, I may not respect their religious affiliation. I may not respect their political affiliation. I may not respect their education. But that's irrelevant, because if I respect them as good, honest human beings and friends, then all that rest means nothing other than an afternoon of heated discussions, or an evening of heated discussions over these issues. And yet we always, but with friends, we can always laugh. We can always get angry. We can always do whatever we do, but always remain friends. I've had a number of people like that in my life, and I've appreciated that, and I do still. Everybody doesn't agree with me. My God, you know, I don't agree with myself half the time on some issues. In fact, Emerson said, a great man is a man of contradiction. What he believes today, he may change, he may find greater truth in something that he believes more so tomorrow and change his whole opinion. But man has the right to do that. We have the right to do that. And as friends, friendship is part of that. Accepting the growth and having patience with people who are your friends. And knowing that 90% of those people, or 90% of that friend, or those friends, are absolutely perfect and always as friends. And the fact that they differ from you in some ways or disagree with you in certain things is a friendly challenge to your own arrogance or your own conceit. And who better to confront your arrogance or conceit than a friend who is confronting you with his own conceit or arrogance. Years ago, I had a roommate. We were both kind of down on our luck about 20 years ago. We enjoyed about 3 or 4 months together as roomies.
each other's ways, and we parted ways, but remained friends. And but I recall how we became friends through another friend who introduced us, and we became fairly good friends for a while. And shared a lot of strange experiences with, but we enjoyed our friendship, and I wrote a poem once about this guy, and it was he took offense to it, but Mike used to take offense to everything I said or anybody else said. It was part of his nature. But I got the biggest, he used to make me laugh almost every day, just because, not that he tried to make me laugh, but just because he was hysterical in the way, his outlook on life. And he said, I wrote a poem once, it's called to the man who has nothing. From a man who has nothing to a man who has less. And he took such offense to that. It was a tribute to him, actually. But nevertheless, it wasn't meant to be an insult to him, but it became one. And and I remember I had he was rather a heavy guy and a big guy. And he was actually a boxer. He could box, I guess. And we used to box with each other once in a while. And but the funniest part about this all, and the reason I'm relating it to friendship, is we parted ways, and we left each other so long, and I moved out, and we got another place, and our life went on, and he got another place and so on. But what made this so funny was that we had a friendship that was unique to that moment in time, maybe 3 or 4 months where we lived together and shared an apartment. And there were some fun memories, but we communicated with each other soul to soul, basically, you know, head to head. There was no bullshit, and if there was any bullshit, it was known bullshit. It's like, you know, it's just like, you know, we knew each other was, you know, bullshitting each other. But it was like, that's friendship to me. That's what friendship was, and I could greet him today. Though I haven't seen him in many years. I could greet Mike today as a friend. And embrace him and begin that same friendship again that we had then. And I can do that with all my friends who are friends. And but other than that, I can say I also have enemies, like we all do. We all have those people that are enemies to us, toxic. Who may have started off as friends or acquaintances, but became toxic relationships and quite destructive, and you know, and never wanting to go back or never wanting to cross their path again. So. Anyway, I got off base here on that. Let me start up again with Emerson. He says there are two elements that go to the composition of friendship, each so sovereign that I can detect no superiority in either, no reason why either should be first named. One is truth. A
friend is a person with whom I may be sincere. Before him I may think aloud. I may arrive at last in the presence of a man so real and equal that I may drop even my most undermost garments of dissimulation, courtesy, and second thought, which men never put off, and may deal with him with the simplicity and wholeness with which one chemical atom meets another. And that's what I was saying about Mike and about many others in there. And so many good friends, and I believe they're still good friends to this day, even though, you know, I may not see them or have talked to them for a number of years. But my memories of them and my my feelings are the same. Sincerity is a luxury allowed. Wait a minute, sorry. Sincerity is the luxury allowed, like diadems and authority, only to the highest rank, that being permitted to speak truth, as having none above it to court or conform to. Every man alone is sincere. At the entrance of a second person, hypocrisy begins. We parry and feign an approach of our fellow man by compliments, by gossip, by amusements, by affairs. We cover up our thought from him under 100 folds. And I have already repeated that, but I thought it was important to do that. My friend gives me entertainment without requiring any stipulation on my part. A friend, therefore, is a sort of paradox in nature. I, who alone am, I who see nothing in nature, whose existence I can affirm with equal evidence to my own, behold now the semblance of my being, and all this height, variety, and curiosity reiterate in a foreign form, so that a friend may well be reckoned the masterpiece of nature. The other element of friendship is tenderness. We are holden to men by every sort of tie, by blood, by pride. We can scarce believe that so much character can subsist in another as to draw us by love. Can another be so blessed and we so pure that we can offer him tenderness? When a man becomes a dear to me, I have touched the goal of fortune. I find very little written directly to the heart of this matter in books, and yet I have one text which I cannot choose but remember. My author says, I offer myself faintly and bluntly to those whose I effectually am, and tender myself least to him to whom I am the most devoted. I wish that friendship should have feet as well as eyes and eloquence. It must plant itself on the ground before it vaults over the moon. I wish it to be a little of a citizen before it is quite a cherub. We chide the citizen because he makes love a commodity. It is an exchange of gifts of useful loans. It is a good neighborhood. It watches with the sick. It holds the pall at the funeral, and quite loses sight of the delicacies and nobility of the relation. But though we cannot find the God under this disguise of a sutler, yet on the other hand, we cannot forgive the poet if he spins his thread too fine and does not substantiate his romance by the municipal
virtues of justice, punctuality, fidelity, and pity. I hate the prostitution of the name of friendship to signify modish and worldly alliances. I much prefer the company of a plowboys and tin peddlers to the silken and perfumed amity that celebrates its days of encounter by a frivolous display, by rides in a circle, and dinners at the best taverns. The end of friendship is a commerce, the most strict and homely that can be joined, and most strict than any of which we have experienced. It is for aid and comfort through all the relations and passages of time and death. It is fit for serene days and graceful gifts and country rambles, but also for rough roads and hard fare, shipwreck, poverty, and persecution. It keeps company with the sallies of the wit and the trances of religion. We are to deify each other the daily needs and offices of a man's life and embellish it by courage, wisdom, and unity. It should never fall into something usual and settled, but should be alert and inventive and add rhyme and reason to what was drudgery. Friendship may be said to require nature so rare and costly, each so well-tempered and so happily adapted, and withal to circumstance. For even in that particular, a poet says, love demands that the parties be together paired, that its satisfaction can very seldom be assured. It cannot persist in its perfection, say some of those who are learned in this warm love of heart betwixt more than two. I am not quite so strict in my terms, perhaps because I have never known so high a fellowship as others. I please my imagination more in circle of godlike men and women variously related to each other and between whom subsists a lofty intelligence. But I find this law of one-to-one peremptory for conversation, which is the practice and consummation of friendship. Do not mix waters too much. The best mix is ill as good and bad. You shall have very useful and cheering discourse at several times with two several men, but let all the three of you come together, and you shall not have one new and hearty word. Two may talk and one may hear, but three cannot take part in a conversation of the most sincere and searching sort. In good company, there is never such discourse between two across the table as takes place when you leave them alone. In good company, individuals merge their egotism into a social soul, exactly coextensive with the several consciousnesses there present. No partialities of friends to friend, no fondness of brother to sister or wife to husband are there pertinent, but quite otherwise. Only he may then speak who shall sail into the common thought of the party and not poorly limited to his own. Now this convention, which good sense demands, destroys the high freedom of great conversation, which requires an absolute running of the two souls into one. We're at the end of the show, and I wish you good evening. And we will not be on tomorrow night with George Dixon. We're taking the night off, as well as George. But we will be back next Wednesday. And again, we'll be taking off Thursday and Friday of next week. So please, that'll be announced. But please be aware of that. And thank you very, very much for joining me tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show. Look forward to talking to you again next week. And I believe we'll be on Wednesday night, but Thursday and Friday we will be off again. So good evening, and thanks for listening.
Hello? Hello? Hello?